Welcome to Running for Real, a global community with a shared love and curiosity for running. Together we reconnect with the reasons why we love to run and discover ways it helps us become better people. Whether it's the quiet moments of a morning run while the rest of the world still sleeps, or befriending the strangers next to you at the start line of a race, we are here to connect with others who see running as the common thread that weaves our lives together. Come join me, Tina Muir, as I talk with people from all walks of life, united by a love of running. Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 342 of the Running For Real podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I am excited that you are here and excited to welcome our guest today, who is going to give us lots of helpful information for us as runners that we have not yet covered in this podcast. So Corinna is an impact entrepreneur. She's a climate activist, a podcaster, and a mother, which is very important, of course, to mention. And she is a podcast host of two podcasts, Nutrition Without Compromise, which actually I will be on next week. So you will get to hear that episode come out. And she has another show called Care More, Be Better, which I highly encourage you check that out as well. She also has a passion for omega-3s, and you're going to learn a lot about those today and why they are so important for runners. Why, when it comes to heart health, we aren't just exempt from worrying about this because we run. And especially those of us who are women, heart disease targets women, and it's something we need to think about. So we're going to talk about that today. We're also going to talk about lots of other elements of nutrition that I think you are going to enjoy. So let's get to this episode with Corinna. Thank you to Athletic Greens for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast. Now, I have been taking my AG1 for 3 or 4 years now, and AG1 by Athletic Greens is an essentialist nutrition company that has created a movement around simplifying our health routine. Now, it's not just for athletes, it's for life elites, for busy mums, dads, rookies, first timers, and everyone in between. Now, it is all based around the fact that better nutrition is made a lot simpler. That means 75 vitamins, minerals, whole food sourced superfoods, probiotics, adaptogens are in one convenient daily serving. This special blend of ingredients helps your body's nutritional needs, supports gut health, immunity, energy, recovery, focus, and aging. What doesn't it do? Now, I mentioned that this is one scoop, so it's just one simple scoop in some water. I always begin my day with it, give it a shake, drink it down, and it is making sure that for the rest of the day, no matter what I eat, even if my diet is not perfect, I am making sure I'm getting those vitamins and minerals, the dairy-free probiotics, the adaptogens, antioxidants, and the superfood complex, all just in my body. It's got the energy-supporting ingredients like a natural form of B12, biotin, bioavailable folate, and magnesium. Yes, I did take it during my pregnancies, and I felt it worked wonderfully, as I did in postpartum. It's also got gut health-supporting ingredients, digestion-supporting ingredients like spirulina, slippery elm, papaya, and burdock root. And they have worked incredibly hard on this with 53 iterations over the last decade. This is a real passion for them. Now, you, as a friend of mine, can get a 1-year free supply of vitamin D3 and K2, which I take with my Athletic Greens, by going to athleticgreens.com/Tina. You will also get 5 free travel packs just for being a friend of mine. So go to athleticgreens.com/Tina. Corinna, I am so excited you are here on the podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I'm excited that you are here.
It's great to be here. I've loved our connection so far, and it's been a while since I've talked about running, so this is exciting.
Yes, this is fun. So you said it's been a while since you talked about running, so it is something that comes up for you sometimes through your work, or is that like a passion thing that you talk about with people in your life?
Well, I just think for me, running was a form of meditation. I was somebody mm-hmm. who could never really slow my mind down or quiet myself enough when I was sitting still. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I got past that 8-mile run moment, it suddenly became something that was meditative. People would talk about the runner's high and all these things, but I never really felt that way about running. I just felt like I got peace. I got tranquility. I got quiet. And it was really something that helped me to, you know, really work through the stresses of my life. I found myself looking forward to those runs in the forest and really letting myself go in nature. I was never somebody who ran with headphones or music. I would find it annoying. I looked at it as my way of communing with the environment. And it really just helped me in a way that I didn't anticipate.
Did you register that at, did you register that at the time that that was what it was doing? Were you able to conceptualize that element of it, or is that in recent reflection?
It was actually coming, it came from two fronts. I'm connected to Dr. Joseph Maroon, who is a elite surgeon. He's a neurosurgeon, neuroscientist, and the team neurologist for the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? Mm-hmm. So pretty well known. And I'd collaborated with him for some time. He is an ultra athlete. He does, you know, Kona every year, as a for instance, and he's over 80 now. So he's an Ironman triathlete many, many times over, and he's finishing first in his age rank now, but he kind of jokes that, you know, I'm the oldest one, so it kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's finishing though, right?
Yeah, impressive.
It's impressive. And I had talked to him about meditation because he had this concept called square one. He's actually written a book about it, where it's like you're balancing your work life and your spiritual life, your family life, and your work life, like everything together. And each line makes the edge of a square. And so I'd said, you know, I have a really tough time with this whole concept of balance. I find it hard to get quiet. And so he had talked to me about flow meditation. And I can't pronounce the guy's name. It's like Mikhail, you know, like long. I can give you the link for this, but okay. His written work is on flow meditation, and everything that he talked about was with repetition. And so I had this realization that when I was doing something simple, like washing my horse or sorting through my worm bin or something like that, that like, while I was tactily working at something that was repetitive, I could get really quiet and I could reset in a way that I didn't really understand otherwise. Sitting still and saying a mantra, transcendental meditation, none of that ever worked for me, even though I wanted it to. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of made sense as I started to explore running through first team and training fundraising for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, because I had a friend who had been diagnosed with cancer, and then later as a training captain, and kind of fell in love with the distance run. I didn't realize it at the time, the very beginning, but it was like once I'd crossed that hurdle of it being the pain of doing a long run, it went into this space where it was like, okay, I was with this rhythm and flow, and you know, every footfall was coming in a pattern, and I would just kind of zen out. While still being aware and present in the moment, I would be in this space of zen. And there's nothing like running that has ever really done that for me. And so I, when people tell me that they have a hard time meditating, this is the thing I jump to.
So interesting you say that, because literally a few days ago, I was talking to a friend who runs ultras, like, you know, 60, 100 mile races. And we were talking about like things we want to do in our lives. And I had said, oh, someday I want to do one of those, what's the name for it? Vipassana, I think it's called, where it's like a 10-day silent meditation. And he was like, why would you want to do that? Like, wouldn't you want to do like movement? He's like, I find that so hard. Movement is my medicine. I can go hours running by myself, like 5 hours at a time. I could do a day, you know. But he's like, the sitting still, the you know, just being there feels so tough to me. But the 100-mile races where it's just me and my mind, that feels natural, and that's a meditation in itself. So it's funny you mentioned that, because I was just talking about that a few days ago and I hadn't thought about it that way. But that's beautiful and you know, very true for, I think, most of us listening. If we pay attention and, as you said, remove the outside distractions like headphones to be able to get to that place. I would love for you to share, and I think you mentioned to me before that maybe this is connected, some kind of realization or epiphany in your life that has in some ways led to this moment right now.
Yeah, you know, I growing up, I was the shy kid. Mm-hmm. And I probably got picked on a bit for that. And so I would often look to the adults to give me senses of affirmation and feel like I was, you know, on the right track or rewarded in some way. Mm-hmm. And while I felt like I was always strong and always able to do, we had this task every, you know, PE session about once a physical education those days, right? Like in elementary yeah. and junior high, we had to complete certain tasks to like check off on their list. And some of them were things like pull-ups, which were forever challenging for me, or, you know, you had to run a mile. And for my age range, they wanted me to run a mile under 9 minutes. And I just couldn't do it. I mean, I'd be sucking air at the end of that mile run, feeling like I had the taste of iron and blood in my throat. It was just torture, yeah. you know? And I really think back and it's like, they didn't really train us to run. They just pointed us at the track and said, do, you know, you're going to do this yeah, many yeah. laps and it's going to be this fast and that's it. So I basically had this really defeatist attitude about myself in this particular way, thinking, oh, I could never. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I really just said, you know, I don't have to believe any of this. I can do, and I'm going to try, and I'm going to seek out and push through some of these uncomfortable moments and see what I'm capable of. And so, you know, it was partly through this inspiration of wanting to do something for a friend that had been diagnosed with leukemia, that had a, you know, very dire situation. He was diagnosed mm-hmm. at stage 4 and his prognosis wasn't fantastic, that I sought out team and training, went through some basic training, like how do you run? Like, you know, how do you position your feet? And I was probably a consummate heel striker before that moment. I never knew that that was a problem, right? So I pushed through. I learned some of the proper things about form and running. And before I knew it, I was running 8 miles and then 13 and doing half marathons and then becoming a training captain and inspiring other people. Leaning back on this one thing that also was integrating into my work life, where I felt like my purpose, and I still feel this way, was to help people understand they could do what they didn't think was possible mm-hmm. if they could just envision it. Mm-hmm. And so because I could prove out that I could do this, that I felt like even though, you know, this was really hard for me to become a runner, but I got there and I was able to complete distance runs that were even, you know, 26.2, which to me seemed like an impossibility before I started with that first step. So I think that it's getting out of this defeatist perspective. It's quieting the noise of the criticism that you've heard throughout your life to say that, you know, that isn't my truth. That might be how you think about me because you're in this judgy space or you don't feel good about yourself, but that doesn't define who I am. And if I can envision something, then I can realize it.
Were you aware of, you said about kind of being criticized for not being able to run that 9-minute mile and what other people, aware of what people were saying. Were you aware this whole time up to that point that that was holding you back? Or was this something you had to unpack a little bit before you could realize like, oh, that really was a defining moment for me. This has been holding me back.
You know, I think it's really challenging for a child to not believe the things that the people they look up to say about them. Mm-hmm. So when it's your parents or when it's your teachers or when it's your principal at the school or any of the adults who are automatically seen as stronger in your life, you know, you kind of take it as it's just a fact almost. And at least that was how it was for me. Now, I mean, that takes unpacking. It takes realizing that people, adults, your parents, they're flawed. And sometimes people don't come to that realization until they're in their 30s. You know, it's like maybe you don't ever realize it in a way. You think that in some way your parents are perfect, or these individuals that have led or had a position of power are somehow right. And so I think, again, that's letting go of the ideas that you have about yourself that weren't really your own. Mm-hmm. And getting centered in what you believe about yourself, and then saying, well, this is what I know to be true and what I want to be true, what I seek. And that, I think that can change everything for you. I mean, at this point, you know, I am sadly no longer a runner. I can look back on the days fondly, but I have some physical ailments that get in the way, and namely what I call my trick ankle. My right ankle likes to sprain itself quite easily. Mm. And I love trail running. Running on the street is just not as fun for me. So now I'm in the hiking boots, and I got to tell you, running in hiking boots is not a thing. I think most people understand that, but I'll go on those distance, you know, spiels and think fondly back on the day that I was able to accomplish a 7-minute mile on a flat track and, you know, say goodbye to that earlier imprinted moment where someone else told me I wasn't good enough.
Thank you for sharing that. I would love if you would, for two different scenarios here. One, if someone maybe has a memory, you know, we all have negative moments that kind of get lodged in your brain. I remember someone telling me once I was too big to run fast. And that always stuck in my brain, like as a moment of like someone telling me what I was and what I wasn't. So for someone who does, can like in this moment, as we've been talking, that moment has come up for them, and yet that they are aware that moment is holding them back, or the doubt in their mind when things get tough. Do you have any advice for what you would say to that person to, yeah, how to move past it, how to break free from that jail of that thought?
Well, I was having a conversation about this with a friend of mine recently, where, you know, we talked about the things that we used to think were impossible, right? People as a group, all people used to think flight was impossible. Mm-hmm. We used to think that traveling under the sea and digging into the seafloor was impossible. And the reality is that when we construct a path, when we envision it, when we think about what we want the future to be, then we can actually build a plan to get there. You know, runners today are faster than they've ever been. And if you go back even 50 years, you know, it's a completely different story. We've learned to fine-tune training, nutrition, giving people the right tools, the right shoes, the right complementary training, not just saying that, oh, you to run fast, you just go out and run. I mean, sure, there's some truth to that, but you also have to do other things to prime your body so that you're not just running into constant injury. So I might have made some of those mistakes, right? Just going out and putting miles on the feet and not doing some of the other things because I didn't know any better. At any rate, I really think it's about envisioning where you want to be. And I know people say you can manifest your reality or something to that effect. And I don't know that I necessarily put a lot of weight to that, but I will say that when I sit back and I think about things and I say, where do I want to head? What are my goals and why? And why do I care about this? Defining that and then plotting out a path becomes easier. And sometimes I'll just have moments where I have a realization, oh, well, if I want to step over this threshold, then I just need to take this leap. And sometimes those moments are scary. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember the first time I ran more than 3 miles as just one, for instance, like coming back to the running thing. I was sucking wind. I hurt my body. My knees were giving me issues. I was, again, that heel striker, which probably didn't help. I thought I had knee problems. I had this thought in my mind. I'd been told that I had knee problems, and so I believed it. And after running 26.2 a few times over, I will say I don't actually have knee problems. I have ankle problems. You know, and there's something about getting proper guidance and form and then seeking out the advice of people that you respect, looking for mentors or doing something that you want to do that can also help, even if it's just a conversation.
Thank you to Orlo for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast and for taking care of me. As a vegetarian, I will admit that my diet has been far from perfect when it comes to getting enough protein in, when it comes to taking care of my heart health and my brain health. As much as I thought it would be easy, it maybe hasn't been. And omega-3s make it easy for me to take care of those areas, and they are also critical for runners. They allow us to create energy, which we need omega-3s to create energy, ATP energy. They give us mental clarity and focus, which of course we need to handle those doubtful inner critic thoughts that come through during our runs. And they help us for those short and long distance runs so we can stay in the mental game. Now, omega-3s are critical for heart health, but as I mentioned, the other thing I love about Orlo is that they are the world's first carbon negative omega supplement, and they are putting back fish into the ocean just through using algae instead of using fish oils. So by working with algae, which is inherently sustainable, they are able to take care of making sure that there are more fish left in our oceans to keep climate change from becoming more of an issue. So they are made of pure, potent polar omegas. This unique polar lipid structure provides superior absorption and is three times the better absorbed than fish oils and other algae supplements on the market. And so you don't get any of those yucky fish burps. Omega-3s are critical for runners. They are critical for us as humans, and especially if you are someone who maybe doesn't get enough omegas in through your food, especially if you're a vegetarian, this is an ideal thing for you to consider. Now, as a friend of mine, you can get a 12% discount. I will put a link in the show notes so you can go get it, but you can also go to orlonutrition.com/discount/Tina. That's orlonutrition.com/discount/Tina, but it's probably easier to just go to the show notes. Go check it out. Yes, thank you. And I hope maybe this can be something of a reminder and that lesson for people in exactly that. So thank you for sharing. And then any thoughts on someone who doesn't know what that thought is? I mean, we all have those as well. I feel like over the recent years, I've been trying to dig in and figure out where a lot of the things that I want to work on come from. And it's hard to find it when you don't know, you can't pin on a moment that you think maybe was that. Anything you would say there?
Oh gosh. You know, massage therapy is kind of incredible. Yeah. I have been on the table numerous times with massage and also with, I will say acupuncture, where suddenly, and I don't necessarily even know what the thing was that triggered me, right? I become a bawling mess on the table and I've cleared something out, you know, or I just literally fall asleep into this deep relaxation. And so I think sometimes even when you're not aware of what you're working on, you're working through something. I mean, I might've had a vision kind of come through my mind as I was on the table getting a little acupuncture specifically in my feet or along my temples and things like that. And then suddenly felt like a release come over me. And I don't even know what specifically that was in those cases, but I do know I felt better after. And so I think, you know, your memory is a tricky thing. It only really allows you to have visibility into certain moments. And while my memory might go back very young on certain aspects of my life, I find that I don't remember things that other people in my life remember that they were there for. So it's nothing's perfect.
Yeah. So true. And it's, I think, something we're going to forever be trying to figure out within ourselves is unlocking those moments, unlocking those memories, and yeah, figuring out how they are affecting you in the day-to-day now. So thank you for sharing that. I want to move on to your professional career, which you have done a lot in sustainable and regenerative brands that challenge kind of what is normal or the way things have always been done. Mm. I would love to hear from you. Is that something that you always were interested in, environmentalism or sustainability, regeneration? Or is that something that appeared later as you got more into this and got to know what these brands were doing?
Well, I grew up on a hippie commune, so I was kind of born into
yes
the whole world of understanding where your food comes from and really being connected to the earth. I became a scuba diver in my early 20s and have traveled around the world and been under the ocean communing with sea life for a lot of my life. Mm. And so, you know, that connection to nature and to our world, just the health of our spaces, has always been something I've been hyper aware of. With that being said, you know, I wasn't always super mindful of things like packaging and plastic waste because they were just so ubiquitous into everyday lives. And we didn't really see the problems of what was happening in our ocean until really the last 10 years. So, you know, being in my middle 40s, I now have a deeper understanding of that. I've been diving our oceans in the Monterey Bay on Hawaii and off the coast of the Bahamas and different spots around the world for, you know, most of my adult life now. And I've seen firsthand the changes in our waters. I have worked for the entirety of my career in the natural products industry. But for a good decade of that, I was working in fish oils and I was telling a story to people that, you know, fish oil was sustainable and that we were only taking fish from abundant waters where fish were flourishing to then.
Was there any part of you that didn't feel right doing that? Or was that what you wholeheartedly believed at the time?
I know I did believe it in the beginning, but then I would start to, as a scuba diver, right?
Yes.
And as someone who leans into the sciences and likes to read about what's happening in our world, I had taken the team I worked with on an excursion to the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute. And this is back in probably 2006, maybe, right? So good, you know, almost 20 years ago at this point. Mm. And I was able to tour their research facility, get on one of their research vessels that goes out on the ocean each day, drive one of their rovers that goes under deep, deep, deep in the water, far deeper than we can, because there's a Mariana Trench there that's something like 2 miles deep, really close to shore, which is why so much research happens off the coast of the Monterey Bay, right? Mm-hmm. So they go out with this rover and I'm able to drive the rover in the little pool. And I mean, it was really just an incredible experience. And then they bring us into the showroom that they have, which is essentially this beautiful building on Moss Landing. So you're looking out on the Monterey Bay with these giant bay windows, and then there's a projection screen and kind of a theater setup. All these shades come down, so they make it dark. Mm-hmm. Researcher gets up and starts talking about some of the issues that we're seeing in our oceans and the changes in our waters. And that the acidity point is getting to the point where mollusks
that's a lot of such a hard word, yeah, mollusks
aren't developing their shells in their, you know, larval state, and so certain species of them are simply going extinct, or that at this point with the path that we're on, because our oceans are the largest carbon sink that we have. Mm-hmm, just the motion of the waves actually absorbs carbon into the water itself, that the acidity increases as their carbon load increases. And so absolutely, as the atmosphere continues to get more loaded with carbon dioxide, the oceans are more loaded with carbon dioxide, just the way they are with oxygen, right? It's the same mix. They get that in the ocean. And with every bit more of carbon they get a little more acidic and a little more acidic and a little more acidic. So those shells can't form and coral reefs die. And, you know, then you also have with that, it in itself, it affects the temperature beyond global warming. So the water is in this state where the water will continually increase in its temperature just a little bit every year, just a little bit, even without the greenhouse gases affecting us to warm the atmosphere, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that water is going to get to a point where the acidity will be so great and the temperature will be so great that vast swaths of our ocean will no longer support sea life. And this isn't something that's debatable. It's scientifically proven out. And we're seeing things like the die-off of the Great Barrier Reef in large sections. I did dive it before that happened. But even then, was starting to see signs that this was coming. You know, so it became a question for me of whether any fishing at all was really sustainable, even if you were only taking from so-called abundant waters. This is untenable. I mean, I've always been somebody who went to support animals. I mean, my first fundraising campaign as a kid and when I actually went to try to get something on a ballot was because I didn't like that they were using rhesus macaques for studies, you know, at 9 years old. So as I guess I've always cared about these things and just got to the point for me where, you know, I very rarely consume fish now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even too. Though I know it's a healthy food, I just can't.
Thank you to All Bears for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast. I am excited to be working with All Birds again this year. And not only, by the way, is there small All Birds, there is also small birds, which are for your kids. They do toddler sizes and kid sizes. They are absolutely adorable. So if you have little ones in your life, I cannot recommend the small birds enough, as if the name wasn't enough to entice you anyway. But today I want to talk to you about the Tree Flyers. These are the shoes I run most of my runs in each week. They are made from a bio-based Swift foam, which is light, bouncy, and ready for distance running. It has a breathable upper that keeps the air flowing for extra comfortable miles. And my favorite thing about the upper is that you can slip them on and off without untying the shoelaces, or at least I can. So when I am in a rush, it is nice and easy to get them on and off. They also have a heel counter and a flared geometric midsole to help keep your stride steady. Now, these Tree Flyers, I have run 3 marathons in them, an ultra in them, and countless runs. They have kept me cool. That even when I was in Maui in the heat running a marathon, they have also kept me warm in the winter as I ran through those cold winter runs. They have a great grip on the bottom and they're just my favorite shoe to run in at the moment. So if you go to allbirds.com and you can use my link in the show notes, you can get yourself a free pair of socks with your purchase. You're not going to find that deal many other places, but you can get yourself a free pair of socks with your order. The easiest way is just to go to the show notes and use that link there. You can also use my code TinaMuir88. But I would probably just use the link in the show notes. So check it out at allbirds.com. Go check out those Tree Flyers. Give them a go. You are going to love them. Let's transition then into the reason you and I are connected is through Orlo. You do work for Orlo. And one of the things that I love about what Orlo is doing is that what we've just been talking about there, Orlo omega-3s are made with algae. So tell us about that piece in terms of people, you know, may have heard of algae kind of being helpful, especially if they are interested in climate activism. But I'd imagine a lot of people haven't heard, like, what is so sustainable about algae and how are we not going to run into the same problem again as, like, saying, okay, well, fish can be sustainable when, as you mentioned, you kind of run out of space in our world. there isn't really sustainable fishing. So, tell us a little bit more about algae and why that's such a big difference to fish oils And then we'll talk about omega-3s and what they do for runners.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is one of the things that was actually quite surprising. You know, when I first started working in omega-3s, I was working to essentially help people understand that they didn't necessarily want to go to flax oil for EPA and DHA because flax oil doesn't have EPA and DHA, right? Mm. And your body has to make EPA and DHA from something like alpha-linolenic acid to get to EPA and DHA.
Let's pause there for like, for someone who doesn't know what those two things are. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So if you are looking for omega-3s, generally speaking, the reason that you're seeking them out is that omega-3s or consuming more omega-3s than omega-6s or getting to more of a balance can essentially help to balance your inflammatory systems so that your body can return to homeostasis after an inflammatory event. A certain amount of inflammation is required for proper functioning of every cell in your body, but these two things can fall out of whack. And mm-hmm. so you heard for a long time about omega-3s for things like inflammation or for things like heart health. But 20 years ago, people just automatically went to flax oil for that. And flax oil is a terrestrial-based omega-3 source, but it's in the alpha-linolenic form, which is a precursor to EPA and DHA. So think of it like beta-carotene to vitamin A. It's the same sort of thing, right? Your body actually has to use delta 5 and delta 6 desaturase to break down the alpha-linolenic acid into EPA and DHA. And because the fact that your body also competes for these specific enzymes to break down omega-6 fats into their downstream metabolites as well, if you're consuming a lot more omega-6 than omega-3, which most people are, it essentially clogs it up. The system doesn't work efficiently for the omega-3, and you don't get the EPA and DHA that your body needs to thrive. Mm-hmm. And so you end up, you know, maybe consuming, like, you'd have to consume 16 times more flaxseed or flax oil in order to get the EPA and DHA you would need. And also at the same time, ensure that you're not getting a lot of omega-6s, that you have zero trans fats in your system because trans fats stop the activity of these enzymes. Mm. Trans fats are labeled as partially or fully hydrogenated oils.
So we'll see that on labels.
Yeah. And here's the thing that's really troubling about this too, because a lot of vegetarians, they can take this approach and say, oh, well, I'm consuming all the right things. I'm eating a balanced diet. I'm eating things like walnuts and chia seeds. I'm making my chia seed pudding and I'm eating walnuts and I use flax oil in my salads instead of all this other stuff. So I'm getting plenty of omega-3s, right? But then they eat like some crackers and the crackers say on them, 0 grams trans fats in the nutrition facts panel. But then if you read the ingredients, you'll see that it says, you know, partially or fully hydrogenated soybean oil, canola oil, palm kernel oil, et cetera, like even peanut butter on the shelf, right? And they get away with this because if it's below a certain threshold per serving, and how many people eat a serving? I mean, we could get into a whole discussion on this, right? If it's below a certain threshold, they can still say 0 grams. And so I want to just pause for a minute on trans fats because this is so critically important that people understand this. We created trans fats back in the day when we were looking to make more shelf-stable food, right? So it's created by taking an omega-6 oil or any oil. You could make any oil into a trans fat, really. Bubbling hydrogen molecules through it under intensely high heat while also exposing it to chemical compounds that are also found in Drano to clear your drains, right? So just gross. Now, what this does is it moves it into a more saturated state. Saturated fats are soluble, they're fully saturated. So all of the endpoints are taken up by a carbon molecule, right? And this ensures that a fat is more stable because it's less likely to develop free radicals. It's less likely to, you know, kind of break down and go bad quickly, right? They also tend to be solid or more solid at room temperature. They might be kind of thicker, like a margarine, right? Mm. Margarine is a trans fat. shortening is a trans fat. And so when you consume these things, which by the way are only one chemical compound away from being plastic, like they're essentially a consumable plastic, your body will use these like they would fats, because you don't necessarily distinguish it from a fat. It is a fat, right? But it makes cell membranes that are more rigid, that don't transmit nutrients the same way, that don't eliminate toxins, that can essentially gunk up your system on a cellular level. And so this is why it's critical, I think, that people walk away from packaged foods as much as possible, are discerning in their label reading, and when they do eat packaged foods, that they're aware of each ingredient in it and that that ingredient to them looks like food, right? You can find protein bars now that look like food, don't have, you know, 16 different colors in them and chemicals that you can't pronounce. So that's one thing. Now, the reason people go to EPA and DHA specifically, and the reason this is so powerful, is because you don't have to worry about whether you have all of the co-products in your system to absorb the omega-3, EPA and DHA, whether you happen to have consumed something that has trans fats in it, whether you consumed omega-6 and now it's competing for those enzymes. You're going to get some absorption of the EPA and DHA. But just like we created a fat with trans fats, we also created another fat in distilling fish oils. We created ethyl esters. And the reason that fish oils have to be distilled the way they do is because you have to eliminate environmental toxins, right? You have to ensure that you're creating a concentration because, you know, generally speaking, they're trying to get to a higher potency EPA and DHA. And this is partly because they're less absorbable in your body than something like a polar lipid. So what is different in the world of algae is that, and this is kind of the long answer to your question, what's different in the world of algae is that you can control the growing conditions for algae. You can grow algae via fermentation, or you can grow it photosynthetically. At Orlo, we're growing our algae photosynthetically. So that means we're using today's energy to create something that's great, as opposed to using sugars to ferment, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we don't have to go through the same kind of invasive distillation. And while most algae that's grown via fermentation is actually distilled in a very similar way to fish oil to concentrate it and get higher levels of DHA and EPA and things along these lines, we're growing algae photosynthetically in a controlled, tightly monitored situation. So we feed it only the nutrients it needs, only the light it needs, and give it conditions in which it can thrive. Mm-hmm. So we can get a product in that first stage that is more potent, that has levels of polar lipids, which are really admirable, and levels of EPA, omega-3, which are also very admirable, so that we can create a finished good that is, you know, more concentrated via elimination of water than anything else, so that we're retaining the polar lipid structure, we're retaining some of the phytonutrients that are in that algae, the proteins, et cetera, so that we can essentially give people something much closer to food than they would be receiving taking a standard fish oil capsule. So this creates something that is up to 3 times more absorbable than a fish oil product or other algae oil that's in the same form as the fish oil, whether it be triglyceride or ethyl ester. And we can get to a space then where we are cutting out that middle fish. We are going straight to algae. We're giving you all the nutrients you need from that omega-3, the EPA and the DHA in the highly bioavailable polar lipid form, which also means there's no burp back. You don't taste the fish. Mm-hmm. And there's scientific reasons for this. Like, you know, you can take a fish oil that's even very fresh and take a capsule of it with a coffee in the morning, and you're going to get some burp back, whether or not it's fishy.
What is that like?
It's actually an aldehyde byproduct. So just as you're digesting it, You know, the oil, if you think about, you know, pouring some fish oil or any oil into a glass of water, it's going to rest on the top, right? Oh, it will somewhat rest on the top of your gastric juices. And as your stomach acids churn and get things moving, then it starts to create these, you know, gaseous effect. And so that's the burp. And if it's rancid oil, it's going to taste super fishy. If it's a fresh oil, you know, fish is fish. You're probably going to taste a little fish, but it's, you know, might be flavored. So it might be like a lemon fish or an orange fish or whatever. You'll have a little burp back. And with something in the polar lipid form, because it's in the form that your cells actually use, you don't get that aldehyde byproduct. Yes.
I can confirm that myself. I've never had any kind of taste in my mouth anytime. So you take an auto.
You don't get that nasty burp back. And so it just it gets into your system really easily. There's also some budding research showing that depending on your genome type, you may have more of a difficulty absorbing the omega-3s from fish or plant sources, specifically those of the APOE4 genome type. I happen to have one representation of APOE4, which is more affiliated with Alzheimer's, degenerative disease of the brain, dementia, et cetera, right? Also heart disease and some other things, which are really lovely too. But some people have two representations. 15% of the population, 15% of all people have at least one representation of APOE4. And so polar lipids seem uniquely able to get into the tissues you need much more quickly. This means that they can get to work. This means that people realize a benefit more quickly, and they're more likely to continue taking the supplement so that they can continue to benefit their health.
Thank you for explaining that. For someone listening who thinks, okay, well, omega-3s are good for heart health and brain health, but I'm doing that. I'm running every day. I'm taking care of my body. What would you say there?
Well, every single cell in your body, you have 37 trillion human cells in your body. The rest is your microbiota, right? So about half of the cells that are in your body are your own, and the other half are made up of your microbiome, which we're still learning a lot about, right? Omega-3s specifically reduce your body's likelihood of developing inflammatory issues. And EPA and DHA are utilized in every cell in your body. Half of the fat in your brain and eyes are comprised specifically of DHA. And so if we're not feeding our bodies the building blocks to make healthy eyes and healthy brains, then long term, we are going to have health disruption events. And so whether you could be working out a lot, eating all the right foods, but not getting enough EPA and DHA, and consuming things like salad dressings and you know, baked goods, all of which have a fair amount of omega-6 in them and almost no omega-3, then your body's just going to build cells out of those omega-6s. And the omega-6s, they stimulate the inflammatory pathways, leukotrienes, prostaglandins, and cytokines, which we've learned a bit about during this pandemic, right? And so you essentially can be perfectly fit on the outside, but be incredibly deficient in omega-3s. We find too that most vegans are really deficient in omega-3s, vegans and vegetarians alike. And this is part and parcel because they don't consume certain foods, but also because if they are eating omega-3s, they're almost always coupled with a fair amount of omega-6. And so you aren't necessarily going to get enough building blocks to build that in.
Thank you for that's helpful and good to know. And especially as a vegetarian, I mean, I'm taking all day, so I'm good now, but definitely I'm sure in the past I was not. What about for recovery from running? You mentioned about the kind of anti-inflammatory benefits. How does it help runners with their training?
Well, it's actually quite simple. If you start to think about the fact that EPA and DHA are used in every cell in your body, they're also involved in the production of ATP energy. And so if you are going to build healthy energy, then this is something that you need. After something like a very long distance run, a good deal of your body is essentially in an inflammatory state. And so you need to have the building blocks present to help to quash that flame, so to speak. So it's healthy, again, to ensure that you're consuming omega-3s before, during, after. I mean, not to say you're stopping in the middle of a run, but like, you know, if you're going through a training situation, you have to think about the fact that you're using omega-3s today that you put into your body over the past few months. And so there's something that you need to have in a continual way as a fat-soluble nutrient. They also help to deliver fat-soluble nutrients to your cells. And if you think about those would be like things like vitamin D, CoQ10, vitamin A. All of these things are required for a healthy working system. And so getting enough of them is absolutely critical throughout any training season. And it's not like it's a today thing and not tomorrow. I mean, I would say if you've never consumed omega-3s as a supplement, I would always tell people get started and perhaps consider doubling up your dose for the first week or two. Just take them a couple times a day as opposed to once a day, because you will see a difference more rapidly. And when you notice a difference, you're going to remember to take it. And one of the things—
How would someone notice it? Like, what would they feel that was different?
Okay. So, I just had, for instance, a friend of mine who actually cleans my house every couple of weeks comes here and takes care of business that I don't want to. she hadn't consumed omega-3s for a very long time. She actually asked me about the Orlo product because she was, you know, cleaning my office here. And I'm just like, well, let me just give you some, right? So she asks me, what am I supposed to feel? I know when anybody asks me this, it's because they're noticing something, right? And so I'm just like, well, I don't know. Tell me what you're experiencing. And she's like, well, my vision seems clearer. And I just feel like I have more stable energy. I'm like, well, yes, that would make sense. Or people who have had like this kind of undiagnosed brain fog for a while, like where did I put my keys or my glasses are on top of my head and I'm running around the house looking for them when I suddenly look in the mirror and there they are, right? You know, these sorts of things just start to fade into the background because you have given your body what it needs for all the neurons and the dendrites to work well. You know, one of our earliest testimonials came from a man who lives in Arizona. And he says, my partner's an optometrist. He keeps telling me I need to take omega-3s. I have tried fish oils and they never really worked for me. But I started taking your product, and on day three, I noticed that my eyes didn't hurt. They weren't scratchy. Day three. Oh. And so, I mean, I know that's early. That is not typical. What I suspect is he probably has the APOE4 genome type, you know, and, you know, this isn't something you would know unless you took a 23andMe test and happened to look at the results. I suspect that that might be the case for him because he had tried. He described to me how much he had been taking before of fish oils and for how long and never noticed a difference, right? And I was like, wow, that's really interesting because research like abounds about omega-3s specifically as it relates to things like dry eye complaints. But, you know, people in Arizona and in these dry climates, almost everyone there will say that they suffer from dry eyes at least part of the year. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can do something like consume an omega-3 in this polar lipid form and expect to see some changes in that way. I personally notice most if I forget to take it. And, you know, I'm someone—
Even just one day or like a
few
days?
Even just one day. I mean, and that's me. And so, you know, I have been consuming omega-3s for the better part of 20 years now. I know I have a fair amount of them in my system. Yeah, sure. I have taken the blood spot test put out there by OmegaQuant. So you can actually check where you are on the range. And I tend to be like 7-8%. Like I'm doing pretty good. That means that my cellular membranes, my tissues are made up of roughly 8% omega-3. Most people in the United States have less than 4. And so ideal range is 8 and above. You know, 8 is, you know, honestly solid. But most people who might be suffering from minor insufficiency are in like that 6 to 8 space, but truly deficient, you know, is well below that. And we see that Vegetarians and vegans are almost always tested when they do not supplement as being deficient.
Mm. Yeah. And now I've been taking Olay for probably 2 months now. I'm going to be interested to see, having been a vegetarian at some point, being a vegetarian, my number would have probably been in that less than 4% that you mentioned. It'll be interesting to see what it does end up being. With that. So, thank you for sharing that with us. And it's just fascinating to learn about, and honestly, something I didn't really put any thought into. But now, I mean, brain health and heart health can't really get much more important than that within our bodies.
So, yeah, I just wrote an article about heart health, just referring to it as it's like, it's the supercharger of our system, because, mm-hmm. you know, it is literally at the center of our bodies. It mm-hmm. pumps the blood that delivers all the nutrients. And mm-hmm. if our blood isn't healthy, if our arteries aren't healthy, if our heart itself isn't healthy, then we can't actually get the nutrients we need where they need to go.
Yeah.
The exactly. oxygen, the carrying ability of red blood cells to carry oxygen to our cells improves with enough omega-3s, you know, and getting enough DHA in particular impacts, you know, your brain health as well as your eyes. And so much of distance running, especially, is a mental game. Like, I honestly don't know what I would have done without it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that helpful information with us today. And I encourage people, go, there's a link in the show notes, go get yourself some Olay, and you will get a 12% discount by going and using that link. I want to wrap up here with just hearing you also, in addition to the work that you do, host two different podcasts. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about that if people have really enjoyed diving in today.
Yeah. So the first podcast that I launched is called Care More Be Better. It's focused on social impact and sustainability. And so I feature a lot of stories that relate to that. But I really look at Nutrition Without Compromise, the show that I host on behalf of Orlo Nutrition, as being this kind of perfect marriage of my passion for sustainability and for healthy food and nutrition. So that show in particular is kind of that perfect marriage. So if you're curious to learn more about nutrition and health, I interview some really critical thought leaders, doctors, medical professionals, also nutritionists and scientists about their research as it pertains to health and nutrition, with the entire ethos of that show being really focused on nutrition and health without compromising your morals, your ethics, and planet Earth. Like, we're all on this orb traveling through space together, and we need to protect ourselves. So
absolutely, couldn't agree more. And you know I'm in there with you of believing in the importance of that. So thank you so much for sharing with us today, for a little bit about your journey and getting to know you and educating us. I really appreciate all that you are doing, and look forward to connecting again soon. Thank you.
The Running for Real podcast and everything we do here at Running for Real would not be possible if it wasn't for the Running for Real team. While I am the person who you hear from most often, and maybe the face of the brand, the rest of our team are such critical pieces of what we do. And without them, I think I'd just be running around in circles with ideas. So I want to take a moment to thank our team. To Jeremy Nessel, who's been with me since the very beginning. Kat McKay, Sally Pontarelli, Kelsey Wang, Sandy Gutierrez, Louise Murphy, Andrew Basola, Alexandria Will, and Maria Vargas. Thank you to each and every one of you for all that you give to Running for Real and our community. I appreciate you, and I'm so thankful for having you as a part of the team.
Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed that episode and learned a lot. I sure did. You should go check out Corinna's podcast, Nutrition Without Compromise and Care More Be Better. You can find links to those in the show notes by going to runningforreal.com/episode342. You can also check out the links in our show notes to our sponsors for today. Orlo, yes, was one of those. You can get a 12% discount by going to that link. Also to Allbirds, who there's another link in the show notes to go get that free free pair of socks with your order and two Athletic Greens to get that 1 year free supply of vitamin D3 K2. So go to the show notes at runningforreal.com/episode342. You can join us for a together run on Monday, and I cannot wait to see you next Friday for a regular episode.